Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to Talk Radio on KABU this Monday morning. And for your regular listeners, you know I'm not either Cecil or Celeste, our usual Monday host. They're taking a break this week. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, and it's my pleasure to be sitting in for them this week. Don't turn the radio away if you're used to them. I think you'll enjoy the topic today. The topic is very important. It's police stops and racial profiling. Isn't it time to put a stop to it here in Oregon? And this is a call-in show, so we want you to pick up that phone right away and get ready to call in with your experiences, your opinions, and your suggestions. It's 503-231-8187. So be sure and call in and give us some of your thoughts on this and some of your experiences. And let's start right out with what we're talking about. We're talking about what are called pretext stops in the legal jargon. And these are where the police use a pretext to stop someone. They don't use probable cause. They don't use what's been called reasonable suspicion. They use a pretext. They see you and they wait and they hope that you might make a left turn without signaling soon enough or wobble the car or something else. One of our most dramatic examples of this took place here in Portland. I believe it was on May 12th. It was Keaton Dupree Otis. He's a young 25-year-old man. I think we even heard the audio of the second police officer saying, "You're kidding. You're not stopping that car." And the other policeman saying, "Well, he has a hoodie on." And we should make it clear this was in inner northeast Portland, and this was a young African-American man. Well, they ended up calling three cars in to stop this man, pull him over to the corner. And at some point after being tased, he shot, and a police officer was injured in the legs, and Keaton Dupree Otis is dead, and his family is missing him today. His family put out some very kind statements apologizing for the shooting of the policeman. And I appreciate that, and I really respect their grief. But I want to say, if that policeman had not used his hoodie as a pretext to stop him, he would probably not be dead today. We can almost be assured of that. He did have a mood disorder, but he wasn't killing himself that day. So those are the kinds of stops we're talking about. And if you wonder, well, what's this got to do with racial profiling? Is it really racial profiling, or is that just anecdotal? No, it's not anecdotal. I have a report here, and I think you've heard about it here on KBOO before others have talked about it. It's come out just this spring. It was put out by a partnership between the Coalition of Communities of Color and by Portland State University, and it's called Communities of Color in Multnomah County, An Unsettling Profile. And when you get into the body of this, this covers so much about our racial issues in this city. So it's just a few pages I'm referring to, and it's very well annotated. You can find this on the web, and I will link to it with the audio later. But let me just give you a little bit of numbers. In the last 10 years, 26 people have been killed through deadly force by the Portland Police Bureau. Of these 26, 8 were people of color. This translates into 44.4% of the deaths, a disproportionate level of 68% over what should have been the number killed if you looked at the actual number of African Americans and other people of color within this city. And African Americans took the disproportionate brunt of even those. 6 times more were killed than other races. So, you know, we've done studies in this area, and we've done studies again, and I say the proof is in. We can say it however we want, but the numbers speak. There is racial profiling in this area, and it kills. I think we do have a caller on the line. Lee, what would you like to say?
How you doing?
Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning in and for calling.
Yes. You know, I think the first thing I want to say is this is not a new thing. If you go back to slavery times, there was a division between slaves and the sheriff or whatever local authorities there were. If a slave escaped, he couldn't get any kind of relief from the local authorities because local authorities, we already knew, were part of the Ku Klux Klan or any other element out there that contributed to slavery. So this thing is not new. It amazes me that people don't understand history because you can stay, we all are born ignorant, but the problem is when you stay ignorant, if you don't understand why there's a division in the black community with the police department, this thing goes back from eons, 400 years. So there is no trust. There is nothing that can bind this community together with the police department based on history. There's a whole new revamping. And I'll give you an example of what you were saying. I'm 11 years old in San Francisco. I'm walking down the street to Kimball Park, where my brother and I play baseball. My mother, we're a decent family, man. So I'm walking back to the house. The area is going through a redevelopment stage, just like the word they use, gentrification, which is a bunch of garbage. There were lots all over the place. I saw my neighborhood just totally go down. As I'm walking back to the house from the park, two police officers in a San Francisco Police Department black and white car drive by me. As they go by me, you got to remember now, I'm an 11-year-old boy. One of the chaps sticks his head out and he takes a snapshot of me. Now, I'm 11 years old, and I'll never forget this to this day. I go, what the heck? And they start laughing as they drive off. I start running after him saying, hey, hey, and you know what? Why they took my picture.
They're wanting
they
to keep
took
track.
It to put it in a mugshot book.
That's right.
That's exactly how now I know darn well if they went up to St. Francis Woods in San Francisco, you would not even see a cop.
Yeah, I think there's no question that there's that kind of disparity and that it is historical. I believe maybe even that some of the original police forces were strictly brought into being to bring back slaves and also indentured servants in northern parts of the colonial area. So the police were originally started by those who ruled to control those they ruled.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it's gone beyond black. It's gone beyond anybody that the police department, in my view, if a chap hasn't got some understanding of why he's a police officer in the first freaking place, you got idiots here who have had all kinds of crap happen to them and been desensitized to being a human being, that they get out here and they don't live in the community, they don't eat the community food, they don't get their hair cut in the community, they don't get their clothes washed at the community laundromat, they don't walk down the community streets, and they don't have no idea because most of these dudes live in Beaverton, Forest Grove, Hillsboro. They don't give a damn.
Well, Leon, I think one of the points you're bringing there is important. It's not just where the police live, but I think it also is they have shown that racial makeup of police does make some difference. It doesn't, by the way, make the difference because they operate inside an oppressive system in which they begin to adopt those feelings. But here in Oregon, here's some more numbers from this report. It appears that the racial makeup of police is white officers hold 86% of the jobs, while making up only 77.9% of the population. And so you see right away that and this difference, by the way, would have an additional 65 people of color be on our police force. That would be just to bring it up to parity so that the people who were doing the enforcement for the government would represent the racial composite that lives with them. I maintain, however, that won't make enough a difference. And I actually maintain that, and I believe that people need to fight this kind of thing and try to end it in many, many different ways and methods. But I would also like to see laws changed.
Absolutely.
I would like to see here in Oregon us pursue, make it be the pilot for the rest of the country. I don't care. But let's get some race-neutral laws in there. Let's take all, so this is provocative, and I want the rest of you out there to be thinking about this and calling in. Let's take away the discretion of police to stop people. It must be probable cause of a crime being committed to stop a car, or something similar for street stops, which are done in the same racially motivated manner. Whether, by the way, the policeman himself is conscious that race is playing a role in his selection. Often they are not, and sometimes for sure they are.
Absolutely. And I want to say to you, keep up the good work, man. That this is the only way people will get understanding if you expose the lie and put the truth out there. Because I'm a number. I don't know about anybody else in this world, but I can only tell you there are many a times that I can say to myself, I love being who I am, but doggone it, sometimes it is an inconvenience.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for calling in, Lee, and thank you so much for sharing your experience with us and your point of view. I really appreciate it. I want to let everybody else know this is Morning Talk Radio. It's your show. We want to hear what you have to say. The number is 503-232-8187. And, I'm sorry. Thank you for Richard. That is 231-8187. Please do call us and give us your experience on this. Have you ever witnessed someone being rousted by the police and you wondered what the heck it was for, or you thought, is that racially motivated? That's a young black kid. I have. And so what do you do when that happens, and what action do you take, and what do you believe that we can do to turn this around? Or if you actually believe it's not racially motivated, get on the phone and give me a call. It's 503-231-8187. And I now have Bill on the line.
Yes.
Welcome to KBOO.
Was recently new to the area, and I was visiting family in Northeast Portland. And I'd gotten into town late, and I pulled up to my family member's house, needed to run to the store. So they come out, they get in the car. I get pulled over shortly after, and the police officer wanted to know why it was that I, you know, decided to pull up to that house and why it was that I left so soon and so quick. And you know, and I noticed that really what it was is that I appeared to be a young black male driving a car that to him was nice for whatever reason. And I thought it was just so, you know, it was so usual. I'm being from Southern California, it was the same thing. All of these things in which you're judged by. But I wanted to speak to the first caller's idea. Mm-hmm. And what Portland police had at one point in time, I think we have to look at what the purpose of that they served. And when you look at the sunset laws and the fact that not long ago in Portland, one of their jobs was to find black people who were out after dark. And a lot of people think that, oh, well, that was so long ago. But I guarantee you that you can still find officers who are alive who was enforcing those very rules. And I think that without, I think like creatures of habit, like we all are, I think many police officers don't even know why they harass young black males or young Hispanic males, or just even, I think it's even now young white males as well in the Portland area. So it's kind of interesting to me that until we look at our history and until we understand the purpose or one of the purposes of the police department being an enforcement arm of people who feared someone, be it, you know, black, be it, you know, the poor white, I think we're always going to have this problem because our police department is really not to serve and protect the most vulnerable in our community. They're really the arm of protecting, I think, the most powerful and most affluent, and their goal is to protect the valuable of others.
That's true, and I think it's really important because I think it goes to the heart of the question about whether we even change laws within this system. Will that make the difference? And I don't think it can make the difference within a system that has rulers and those that they can't rely on being oppressed so that they can continue to rule. However, I do think we can make changes within the current system that can impact the very real lives of people who are, you know, living in it day to day. And I think one of the things that's important, as you pointed out, is that I don't. Some of these police officers don't even know why they're making certain choices. And also, some of them don't realize. I bet if you read their numbers to them, they wouldn't know that they represented racial bias until it was pointed out to them. But perhaps that's part of the changes we need to make. I'm saying, one, take discretion away. It really needs to be provable in court as, probable cause that a crime was being committed. So they can't just say, well, I felt suspicious. Because what we found is that feeling suspicious is always subjective. And if you are if you have any racial bias, it will get acted out in that. And none of us are free of racial bias or other kinds of bias. I think you're right. I know that when my son was a young skateboarder, and he's a white young man, but I warned him that police would treat him differently. And he started laughing at me. He said, I already know that, Mom, because they do harass, I think, young men a lot more than young women, even, and even young white men. But it's very clear it's disproportionate racially. And in this city, for sure, African-Americans take a much harder hit.
You know, and they'd like to make us believe that because there are African-Americans on the police force, somehow we are not racist. And I think that even within the police force, there are divisions among race where you have different attitudes of what law enforcement is and should be.
Yes.
So it's kind of interesting that even when you have a large group of people within those groups, there are subgroups within that, even the police department, where there are different ideas about, you know, I think if you talk to most black officers about what they think about the department in general, and I had a chance to talk to one, it was more or less like, well, you know, this is my job, and I try not to get involved in the politics on that end. Or, oh, you know, that's a subject that, you know, many of us don't like to touch on because it's, you know, no matter what you do, if you're African American and you're talking about racism today, it's like, oh, you guys are just stuck in some time warp.
Well, and isn't that one of those things that just drives you a little bit crazy? I mean, here you have your own personal experience of being stopped for no reason other than being black. And yet for most white people, they don't see that experience. So they have a tendency to not believe it. They think, oh, that couldn't really be why they did it. And that's why I like to go back to, we've got to get it out of the subjective and go to the objective. The numbers have been well documented over a decade.
Well,
we don't need to rely on what people think because we can prove.
you know, even when you have proof, I think it usually takes the experience where you find that now the police department, their violence not just towards one particular group, but now I think you're starting to see it from a social type of aspect where it's more class related, where if you're of a certain class, you're almost now just as likely to be killed by the police. And I think as we start to move into this thing where, you know, the poor white male is just as much a victim as the poor black male, that our society will start to wake up, because that's usually what it takes, unfortunately.
Yeah, the majority
Thanks
getting
the
hit
show.
As well. Thank you so much, Bill.
All right.
We do have other callers on the line, and I want to let the rest of you out there know that this is Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is police stops and racial profiling here in Oregon. Isn't it time to end it? We do have another caller on the line. Another Bill. Thank you for joining us, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. Yeah, I live in Beaverton, in a little bit lower income area, and I can say I get pulled over in my front yard watering the lawn, you know.
Wow.
It's just because, you know, maybe I'm wearing some camouflage shorts or riding my bicycle or something like that, and they wait for you to maybe, you know, go across an intersection without looking, or maybe the lines aren't painted, and you know, and then that gives them they think in their mind the reason right there to stop you and find your whole life, you know.
So when they stop you, what do? Just ask for your ID, ask you what you're doing?
Yeah, they generally, and then they'll add their own comment, like, just wanted to make sure you don't have felonies or warrants in other states or something like that, you know.
Can I ask you what your racial background is? or your racial?
Well, I'm seventh generation immigrant from Scotland, but okay, I'm a white American.
Yep. Yeah, I think that we do see the oppression of police definitely cross racial lines, and we see it more particularly, like you said, yours is a more lower income area. We definitely see more oppression of lower income people, I think, all around the country. And I think we've seen a greater militarization, and maybe some more of the listeners out there will call in, but we're just seeing an increase in aggressive police activity in terms of stopping people.
Yeah, and if you ride your bicycle in Beaverton, make sure you make all your stops at all the stop signs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Bill. I think we have another caller on the line. Is that correct? We've got another caller on the line, Richard. Joanne, thank you so much for calling in. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. This is an old lady. About a month ago, I was walking down Southeast 39. And I get so tired of seeing trash everywhere. Anyway, this plastic cup was in my path, and I kicked it out into the road. It landed about 2 feet from the curb. And before I did that, I looked to see if any cars were coming. And not long after I did that, a police car came and stopped. The guy opened the window, he said, you know, I asked him what I was doing. So instead, so I just went ahead, picked up the cup, and put it where it was laying on the sidewalk. And he said, thank you and have a good day. And he had brown skin. He was Hispanic or something. Mm-hmm. But to me, I don't care what color. To do that to, I mean, it's such a waste of valuable time, especially the kind of job that to waste their time in that, to do that, especially to an old lady, is so ignorant and so wrong, and I'm getting off the air. Goodbye.
Well, Joanne, thank you very much for your comments. And this is Talk Radio on KBOO. It's Monday morning. We're talking about police stops and racial profiling. And you can call us at 503-231-8187 to have your comments heard. We also are going to play a little clip for you in just a minute. One of the things that people say, well, is if there's really so much racial bias in our police enforcement, why aren't we hearing about this? Why aren't there more lawsuits? And of course, we know about the lawsuits that happen after someone dies here in Portland. By the way, I would call James Chassie, the young man who was mentally ill and who had 26 broken ribs after the police encountered him. That was a pretext stop of the street type. They say they thought they might have seen him urinating. Just read the euphemism in there. They didn't like the way he looked. He hadn't urinated, and he hadn't done anything according to all reports. So we're talking about pretext stop. They use some reason. And the police, by the way, will fight very hard to maintain pretext stops because they believe it uses their intuition. But let's look a little deeper. You out there know our intuition comes from inside us, which means our biases, our perspectives, and not one of us is free of racial bias. I'll make that statement pretty boldly. So that's going to get acted out. We need to take away their subjective discretion. But before we go to that other clip, we've got some other people on the line. I think we'll be going to them right now. Richard, do we have another person on the phone line? Actually, I'll give him a minute. He looks a little distracted. He's got maybe two or three calls going on. So once again, that number is 503-231-8187. I wonder if you've witnessed this kind of stop. I had some cousins who came in from the Bay Area. You would think they would be used to seeing a little bit of police harassment. They were downtown by the Multnomah County Library, and they saw a young African-American man sitting on the bench. He looked to be a teenager. And they watched as the police came up and just started hassling him. And before they knew it, he had had to show his ID, go through his backpack, and get up and leave. He wasn't doing anything. That's the kind of rousting we're talking about. Lucky for him, they didn't decide to pick him up on something. So if you've witnessed that kind of thing, what have you done? Have you done anything? What can we do? Call in and let us know. It's 503-231-8187. And we do have Michael on the line. Michael, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say, actually, the other night, it was around 12:30. I was out riding my bike down Prescott, and the police started circling around me constantly. I've seen the same police car about six times just circling around watching me. parking behind buildings. I mean, it was pathetic. I just waved at him every time I saw him. But
how does that make you feel, Michael, when you know they're just, I mean, I have a friend they follow around in pennies, for goodness sake. She's a, you know, a master's degree in social work, and they follow her around in pennies.
Well, I knew it was racial profiling, and it reminded me of Germany. But I think, you know, one of the problems with the police is that they're backed by the media. I think in order to change a lot of what's going on with the police, you're going to have to change a lot of how the media cover and back the police and their actions. Because, as you know, the media tend to sensationalize everything. And once there's a involvement with a police shooting, even before there's been an investigation, the media is out there, if they can, they're going to denigrate the person that the police then shot by bringing up, well, this guy had a past arrest, he was this, he was that. Even before there's an investigation, the media is spouting all this stuff over the news, and so they're in cahoots with the police. Also, too, another thing that I've noticed, because I've been in Northeast Portland since I was 10 years old, and I see an increase of police profiling and shootings have increased exponentially with gentrification. And because when Northeast Portland was pretty much mostly black, police didn't come up in here shooting a lot of black people because I don't think they felt like they could come up in here. And they had to have a black cop with them when they came. And so I think as Northeast Portland gentrified and it became open up, I think the police now feel like they can do that because the black community is basically broken up. There's nothing here pretty much but the churches.
I think you're right that the breaking up of the black community has caused more of that kind of behavior. And you see the breaking up of the community out into more the Gresham area and the Beaverton area as the housing became more expensive inner city and as grandparents died and the house didn't pass down and that kind of thing. And I agree with you. And I think that part of that is their role of, quote, protecting the ruling classes. So they almost imperceptibly see their role increasing in protecting the areas where there are more of the dominant culture.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that's without a doubt. I mean, part of the reason, I mean, the police, I think, what's her name, Vera Katz, she was instrumental in that. And then
militarizing the police also. She played a big role in militarizing our police.
She put the police station over in Northeast Portland, and then the homeowners associations. You know, when the whites moved in, they took over the homeowners associations, and they started all of this stuff. So, I mean, that's part of it.
I agree with you, Michael, and I want to thank you for those points. Right. I want to thank you particularly also for bringing up that point of the media's role in backing the police and backing the government whenever there's one of these shootings, instead of really investigating the government and coming in from the side of, you know, this may have very well been wrong. Definitely. They don't come from there. So thank you very much, Michael. We've got two more callers on the line, so let's go ahead and go to our next caller. That is... Go ahead and put our next caller on, would you, Richard?
Hello.
Oh, he is on. Good morning. You are on now. I'm sorry I didn't catch your name. What's your name?
Tyler.
Hi, Tyler. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, this morning I was looking around the internet and I saw that there's a federal change to all the Miranda rights now. I don't know if you're aware of that. But...
I was aware of that. Good point for you bringing it up. Yeah, they've made it much easier to... have people unaware of their rights. Go ahead and talk about that.
You have to tell them when you want to remain silent, I guess. You can't just remain silent. You have to tell them now. And apparently you have to ask where your lawyer is because they won't tell you. I don't know, a bunch of other stuff. That's awesome. So that's definitely one point up for us, right?
Yeah, right. I do think that there's been a whole series of laws. I hope to do a show of this, changes in the rulings about laws that protect the rights of those being arrested. That have increased the totalitarian nature of our state.
Absolutely. And also, yeah, you're right with the militarization. Basically, if cops didn't have M16s, they wouldn't be so inclined to shoot people in the back of the head. But when they're all sitting there with the military-grade rifles, and it's basically crack. If you ain't white and you ain't rich, then your life doesn't matter, and we can exterminate you, and we can call progress, basically, is how it works.
Well, I think they also get a culture going of fearfulness and we against them, and, you know, it all rolls along. I don't think that all individual policemen are bad people. I really don't.
Absolutely not. It's just the establishment and the people that are in control that don't matter. They have an agenda, and they use the facets of the government to get their agenda across.
People so what, Michael, let me ask you, you sound pretty more on the radical edge of it. What do you recommend? There's been some pretty strong protests, some unpermitted street protests. I think we shouldn't have to have a permit, so that's okay with me. But different actions to try to push back on this. What do you think we should be doing?
Well, first and foremost, just talking, I think, is the most important thing. When you see something go down in your town, I live in Northeast Portland, so I see things a lot, but speak up, say something, you know?
Do you stay and witness if you see a police pull over young
Absolutely.
People?
Don't just sit back and let things happen, because a lot of people sit there and stare like sheep, but you have to say something, you know? Or else what good are you? You're just giving in to, you know, the oppression, so basically that's how I see it.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Michael. I have some other callers on the line. And before we go to the next caller, however, I do want to let you out there in the audience know that you're listening to KBOO on August 2nd, Monday morning. This is Talk Radio, and you can call in at 503-231-8187. I want to let you know what's coming up on the rest of the day. At 9 o'clock, it's going to be the Old Mole Variety Hour. That's one of our best shows. They always have a variety of important topics for you to hear. And then Can It Happen to You? It Can't Happen to You. Can't Happen Here. Can't Believe It's True. Tune in to Air Cascadia today at 10 a.m. when independent journalist Janet Phelan recounts the life-threatening events that led to her flight from the United States. So that sounds like a very important Air Cascadia coming up. That's at 10 o'clock. At 10:15, we hear Locus Focus, Environmental Issues with Barbara Bernstein. And at 11 on Health Watch, Dr. Barbara McDonald, author of The Breast Cancer Companion, discusses why integrative healthcare, naturopathic, and conventional medicine together is so important for the treatment of breast cancer. And then at 11:30 on Madness Radio, the guest is Robert Whitaker, Pulitzer finalist, author of Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. So we have a great lineup for you going on today. And now let's go back to the phones. We're talking about police stops and racial profiling, and isn't it time to stop it here in Oregon? And so, Richard, do we have that next person online? Taylor, welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Is this Taylor?
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. First and foremost, I am a police abolitionist. I don't think that we need the police. I think that they actually reinforce and upkeep social divides within our society, race, class lines. And, you know, with the recent murder of Aaron Campbell, which is really, to me, like a modern-day lynching, an unarmed black man who is simply going to get, trying to get some help in a situation where he was feeling suicidal after his brother, who was at OSU dying of kidney failure, died. And so he was feeling suicidal, so his girlfriend called the police, and of course they come out and murder him. And you see the same thing, modern-day lynching happened in Oakland, you know, with Oscar Grant, and everyone's, I'm sure, it's probably most people have seen the videos of
that was him. Straight out murder, wasn't it? You could just watch it.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's all nothing has changed. You know, here in Oregon, the police were founded explicitly to protect the interests of white settlers and the corporations, fur trading corporations. Fur trading lines, and they were explicitly formulated to oppress the Native American people who were getting in the way of these corporations' profits. You know, for the first, like, 4 or 5 years, the Portland Police Department didn't arrest a single white person. They were only harassing the Native American people for getting in the way of these corporations' property. And I think that they still serve exactly that function today, to protect the white settlers' interests in this society. And you can see with the first major population of color, Chinese people outside of Native Americans in the city of Portland, they faced massive repression. They were being harassed for, you know, wearing traditional clothing or, quote, speaking funny, you know.
Having the long queue on, all sorts of things. Yeah, I think our racial history in Oregon has been well documented, that this has been a state that tried to stay as white as it could, and when it could, it pushed out other people, though for uses of labor, it always was willing to import. We weren't unusual in that. There are some unusual aspects of Oregon. I do feel that we are certainly more white. And one of the things that does bother me is that we think of Portland and Multnomah County as progressive. And I think in many ways there are progressive aspects of it. But I do think that we who are not, who are of white complexion or European descent, have got to face that it's a myth that we're progressive as long as we still discriminate so severely against people of color. And today I'm talking about police stops, but there's a whole huge report showing that this goes into every aspect of life in our area, including housing, job searches, employment, education, et cetera. And I think that, you know, so we have a particularity here. We like to pretend that we're very progressive, and we are progressive in some ways, but we like to keep our blinders on when it comes to the issue of race. I don't think that's because we're bad people, by the way. I think that's because it's a difficult issue, and we need to face up to it.
It's like the last man mentioned with gentrification. You know, Portland's really the leader in urban renewal projects of the whole nation, and that's kind of like how they really maintain this social segregation in Oregon from the offset, was having school children in North Portland have to go to local schools and not having a choice to decide where they get to go, and reinforcing the whole segregation in Vanport, which most of the African-American community was concentrated in. But today what they do is they keep shifting everybody around with these urban renewal projects and keeping these communities in motion and creating these markets for white people to move into their neighborhoods and find cheap housing and kick everybody else out, and then the housing goes up. And so you have this created migration of communities of color in Portland. This is the...
So, Taylor, let me ask you. I agree with you that, and I think most of our audience knows that we've created that kind of situation going here. And I hear that what you said, you're a police abolitionist. What do you do in the interim? What do you do in the interim? We haven't got a revolution happening yesterday. We don't have the society overturned. We still have people every single day facing this kind of problem. What kinds of things do you do in the interim to try to fight this issue?
I think that we have to, part of it's speaking up, like has been mentioned, and part of it's also getting to know your neighbors and building.
Thank you for that. That's a really important point. I'm going to stick with you right there, Taylor. Know your neighbors. Shake hands with those people. Get to know the people that you don't usually hang with. They're your friends. You got to get to know them. That's the way you break through those barriers.
They're going to be the ones that support you if, you know, stuff is really going down and you need help. You can call a neighbor if you really know them well, and they could come over and support you if for whatever is happening, if someone's trying to break into your house or
something. if you know your neighbors and your neighbors are people of color, you can see when things are happening to them and you can back them. You can help them out. You can help support the schools. You can learn from them the issues they face. I think so many people don't recognize racial prejudice when they see it because they're not living inside it. They're not feeling the impact of it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Taylor. I believe we have another caller on the line, so we're going to let you go. Thank you for your points. And this is Linda Olson-Osterlin for Monday Morning Talk Radio on KBOO. We're talking about police stops and racial profiling. Isn't it time to stop it here in Oregon? The number to call is 231-8187. And Richard, we now have Dean on the line. Dean, thanks for joining us.
How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
Pretty good.
What would you like to say?
I think it's all on us. If we are the people, we let it happen. So I go both sides. I live in the Hood River, and there's plenty of good cops here. But then you go to Portland, where the jungle's bigger, and it's all about training. I think you should have more training with the cops, like 2 years psychology degrees, you know, in college before you become a cop.
I think you've got a good point. Training can make a big difference.
But if we are the people, we let it happen. So, You know, it goes both ways.
That's right. So it's up to us to help make these changes, not just stand out here and throw pot shots.
We racial profile the cops, and if you think the cops are racial profiling us, we're doing the same to the cops, because there's plenty of good cops out there that feel the same way we think. But then you get those bad apples, and we gotta get rid of them.
Right.
If they can't do their job, I mean, you know, I have plenty of jobs. I've been pulled over plenty of times. I mean, I got a drunken disorder. I just got a ticket like a month ago, following five cars, but I was the last car, and they said I was doing 70 miles an hour, but it drops down to 45, and I was doing like 45 or under, because I was following these five cars, but they pulled them behind me and gave me a ticket for it. But, you know, then you got to think, too, you know, there's plenty of times I was doing 70 and caught myself.
So let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a different question, Dean. If there are good cops and there are bad cops and we want to eliminate the bad cops, one of the suggestions I would have is that we be able to look at the numbers from the stops that cops make. I mean, the reason we have these numbers, these aren't numbers I'm making up. These are numbers from the police department. So we can know which individual police are doing what kind of disproportionate arresting. I think there's actually why, you know, I used to work in social work, and you can put into your evaluations when you're evaluating an employee darn near anything you want them to live up to. You have to let them know they have to live up to it. But how about making sure they live up to no racial disparity in their stops? You know, what do you think about that? That we actually like put it in part of their review. You know, you're not going to stay in this department if you consistently stop more black people and Latino people than white. What would you think of a ruling like that to help change it? Oh, I think I've lost you, Dean, but I think I have another caller on the line. I'm throwing that question out to all of you then. We've got to think of really, I'm very practical. I want to think of real practical ways to put an end to it now. So it's 503-231-8187, and I have Gary on the line. Welcome to KBOO, Gary.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make a few just pretty much straight observations here.
Okay.
You guys have a lot of different topics all wrapped up into this one big topic. But basically, Officer Nice needs to go to jail. And whether he's fired from the police officer as an officer or not, he needs to go to jail. He's been involved in too many altercations that have led to violence.
Could you do this again and tell me who this man is?
His name. Officer Nice.
Uh-huh. He is the one involved in what?
Well, he was one of the officers involved in the murder or the beating of that homeless man that you
James Chassie.
Earlier.
Okay, sorry,
James
I'm just Chassie. Not aware of the individual policeman's name. So he's yes, and he's been in more,
harassing,
right?
Yeah, and harassing. Yeah, he's a Portland officer, of course. And so, I mean, before we can make any progress, we have to hold these kinds of officers accountable. These are the guys that are making it. So they're making all these police officers look bad. Okay, and that's what's starting to gain a lot of momentum against prejudices just against officers for being officers. Okay, so that, I mean, we have to.
So number one, hold them accountable. I agree with you.
They have to be held accountable. I mean, they have to go to jail. They can't just be fired so they can go work somewhere else. That's ridiculous. And number two, as far as profiling, in my experience, everybody is generally profiled, except for maybe other officers and judges and stuff like that. And this includes people who use drugs. I mean, if you look at people who use cocaine versus people who use crack, and I don't use either, but I'm just saying, people who use cocaine, if you get caught with a gram of cocaine, the sentence is going to be up to between 18 and 100 times lighter than if you got busted with a gram of crack cocaine.
Did you, just to interrupt you here for a minute, Dean, did you hear that they just changed that as of like yesterday or 2 days
yes.
ago? They passed a change, but they still didn't change it entirely. It was interesting. They reduced the disparity between those sentencing, but they didn't get rid of it.
Yes, and it's different in all cities and all states, but and generally their reasoning behind it is because black people generally use crack more often, and white people use cocaine more often. Business people use cocaine. College students use cocaine. You know, it's just one of those things. And it's Texas booger sugar. You know, it's everywhere. And then they
So what? Let me go back, though. You were saying you think they're profiling everyone. What do you mean? Do you think there isn't a particular racial aspect to it, or?
Well, for the crack and cocaine situation, apparently there is. If you just look at just the basic history and the laws and the way
yes.
that they're worked up, and stuff around the country and stuff from the 70s on up. It's just, it's obvious, and it's admitted. It's just admittable. With the homeless, homeless people are always going to be harassed and profiled, and that's just the people traveling through town, backpacking, touristing, you know, that kind of thing, that aren't, you know, spending a lot of money but kind of just seeing the sights, they're going to get profiled.
Well, I agree with you about that, but I'm going to just argue with you here for a little minute, because I do agree with you. Like I said, my son is a skateboarder. I think they do target skateboard youth here in town, or they did for a while, as well as others. But even given that kind of profiling and that kind of, like another guy called, rousting people who are, you know, live in a lower class neighborhood, even with all of that, there is still a disparity at the level of who do they stop? And then once they stop them, who gets arrested? And then once they're arrested, who gets sent to jail? Then for how long they get sent to jail? And then for actually how many of them are watched on parole? At every single level, there is an escalating attention to people of color. So even when you account for that, yes, they're oppressing others, they do. And I want this because I think it's so important that we not, especially here in Portland, turn our back from this. It is worse if you're Black, number one. It's far worse. And then it's worse if you're Latino. And it really does matter what race you are. It is true that you can get rousted and harassed being a poor white person or a young backpacker, but the numbers will say not at the levels. And even if you get stopped, you won't get arrested at the levels if you happen to have been Black when you got stopped. So yeah, I just totally want to make sure that totally point agree. Is like way out there.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because we just don't want to know that here in Portland. We just don't like to know that somehow. You know, it's,
yeah, I mean, profiling is profiling, and it can go from any degree to, you know. And then my other point is, I mean, Black and white and brown, whatever, it's a big deal to the establishment. They have to have them separate. It's a separate and conquer tactic. It's just the way that they do business.
It is.
And it comes down to also, it's not just Black and white, but it comes down to rich and poor.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're going to be ostracized in this country for anything, it's going to be for being broke. It's going to be for being poor and things like that. And that's just a basic fact that goes all the way back. That goes all the way throughout the history of all civilizations. Poor people are always discriminated against. They always get stepped on by the rich, and the rich pay the establishment. It's protected by the police. I mean, they're the street police, and it goes up to a bigger level. It goes up to the National Guard. It goes up to the military if they have to take it that far. But basically, the police are there, not all police. Okay, but I'm just saying.
But their role.
There is a very big role that their business, number one priority, is to protect the businesses and the politicians of the communities. I think that is generally their number one role. And to do that, they have to keep the streets safe, and they use whatever tactics they believe.
Well, and I agree with you, and I want to...
For power.
I'm going to need to move on to some other callers, but I'm going to go back to one of the things that you did say that I think nobody else had brought up again today, though we've talked about it before, which is we need to hold these police accountable. And I think that Shrunk is not going to ever bring charges against a policeman in the city, so we have to be serious about getting him thrown out. He's the man who holds the grand juries and manages to come out with no charges against these officers over and over again. Well, thank you, Dean. I believe we have another caller. It was what? Gary?
Yeah.
Were you Gary?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gary. Anyway, thank you very much.
All right, have fun.
You too. And this is Linda Olson-Osterlin for KBOO Radio. It's a call-in. You can call in at 503-231-8187. We're talking about police stops and racial profiling. Isn't it time to stop it? I'm an advocate for working with your local Oregon legislator. I don't know that that means we can get something through there or not, but I think if we ever can, now is the time. They certainly can't say we have to study it more, the question of police stops and racial profiling. I would actually like to see one of our legislators, and I will talk to my own, about drafting a bill here that will actually call for an end to pretext stops, that our police officers must have probable cause of a crime being committed. Why should they stop us with anything less? Let's be real. That would stop crimes. Do you believe that they need to enter cars and search to find things to make up a crime before they actually arrest someone? Or can they let people go about their business and wait until there's probable cause? I think we'd have a lot more efficient police force and a lot less racial bias in it. Do we have any other callers on the line? Let's go ahead to our next caller then, Richard. That caller will be announced to me in just a moment. This is 503-231-8187. It's Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO, and I'm Linda Olson-Osterlin. And Richard, who's my next caller? Will, thank you for joining us. You're on.
Hey, good morning. Thanks good for
morning.
Having me.
Thank you for joining.
Well, one thought I had about the police accountability is that I think that the recent confrontation in Oakland really gives us a lot of lessons. And one thing that we really saw in Oakland is that the legal system was unable to hold the police officers accountable. But one thing that's even more interesting than that is that it was really the rebellion that happened on the street of Oakland, particularly the youth of Oakland that stood up in the face of police violence, that even was able to begin an accountability process. And so I think the lesson that we can take from Oakland is that unless we organize as a community and unless we're ready to take it to the street, there's really not a lot that the system can do about police accountability, and it's really up to us in the community to make that change happen.
I think that's a really important point, Will. I think that, what was it, almost 3 weeks after Oscar Grant had been killed before they even brought the officer in for questioning, even though there had been released on the web clear video, the whole world could see what had happened. And it was people going into the streets just furious. I mean, just fed up.
One thing I really want to encourage other Portlanders to remember is that when Oscar Grant was executed on the platform in Oakland, the police weren't the one taking the video of it. It was everyday people on the BART train that were taking those movies. And the cops tried to confiscate those videos. And it was those daily acts of rebellion that captured those images that caused that rebellion. So I really encourage Portlanders to remember that we have those camera phones, we have those cameras. Take pictures of the police. Everyone can cop watch and just make that part of your daily practice.
And that is really important. I want to thank you for saying the word cop watch. We do have a good organization here in Portland called Cop Watch. You can get statistics about police shootings and police interaction on that if you'd like, and I will also link to that. I agree with you. Everybody can be a cop watch, even when I'm busy. If I see the police pulling over someone of color in my neighborhood, I pull over beside them, up against them, because I've learned they get a little mean if you get too close to them. But I let them know. I let the police know I'm watching. Mm-hmm. And I have my phone out. And sometimes I've sat there 30 minutes until they're done with the person because I don't trust them. And I don't want to drive away and find out they killed that young man for no reason.
Absolutely. Our community safety is up to us in the community. It's not going to be the government. It's not going to be corporate forces. It's not going to be the legal system. It's going to be everyday people in our community that create accountability and create safety.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Will. You've had some really important points. We have some more callers on the line, so go ahead and take them. But I really appreciate your perspective.
Have a great one. The struggle continues.
Yes, you too. All right. Who do we have on the line now? Brian, thank you for joining us. What would you like to say?
Oh, many things. But first off, on an overall perspective, what do you expect when the police are now pretty much paramilitaries? You know, they've been increasingly militarized since, well, Reagan, but most especially under the last crowd of criminals themselves.
And much of that militarization actually came in the form of drug money, money from the war on drugs.
Yeah,
and the Defense Department actually gave a lot of military equipment to police departments all over the nation.
Yeah, and now they feel more and more invincible. And it's not really confined to Portland. We had a really good cop over here at the coast in what we call the Three Villages area. And he got promoted upstairs to, I mean, he knew everybody. He, you know, you'd see him in the coffee shop, occasionally have a beer, you know. He was a good, I mean, a lot of common sense, and there was no trouble. We haven't had much trouble. There was a park ranger murdered a few years ago, but that was an odd incident.
Yeah, I remember reading about that.
We're
running out of time, so let's have your most important point first.
Now there's these three young Zealous guys sitting, being a damn nuisance. And there's a bunch of us seriously thinking of, in fact, the city in Nehalem is withdrawing from that service, and we're thinking of recalling them at the higher level. And one more thing, friend of mine was driving through to Idaho, and he was stopped just over the border by an Idaho cop who stopped him, get this, just because he was from Oregon and there's all that. I'm not making this up.
I know.
What's in your car? And he said, my dog. And this is quite a new car. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's these guys are starting to feel invincible.
A little bit too entitled. Well, thank you so much for calling in. You know, we're going to have to wrap it up. We are out of time. I want to thank all of you who are out there and any callers who didn't get on. I want to thank you so much for joining this conversation. I trust you will carry it out into your community. This has been Talk Radio on KBOO, and thank you for tuning in. We'll now be going to the Old Mole Variety Hour just after a moment. Thank you so much.